Welcome. This is the UX Design Cast podcast series, and my name is Carl Vredenberg. This is episode number 35, and it's the format of Design News Panel. And I'm delighted to have with me today four panelists and two new ones this time around as well. So let me introduce them all off the top. First of all, Keith Instone, who is the information architecture lead within IBM CIO's office and works on IBM.com. Welcome, Keith.
Hi, Carl. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, too. And second, we have Eliane Tosman, who is user interface designer at the IBM Media Design Studio. Welcome, Eliane.
Hi, Carl.
And thirdly, we have Ben Sykes, who is UX design strategy consultant at Interactoid. Welcome, Ben.
Hey, Carl. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Fabulous, and glad to have you. And last but certainly not least, we have Sean O'Keefe, who is interactive festival producer and web developer at South by Southwest Interactive. Welcome, Sean.
Hi. Yes, that's a mouthful.
It is. And welcome all of you to this session in terms of the panelists and all of you who are listening as well. I wanted to just before we got into the topics for this a very special episode, I wanted to just say a little bit about how we went about getting the latter two panelists, the new panelists that we've added this particular month. I tweeted on Twitter some while ago for people who were in sort of the user experience and design area from across the globe, across the various industries that various people would recommend we have as panelists on the session, and people that were, you know, well-read and kept up to date on what was going on in the industry. And the two people that we have on today, in addition to our regular panelists, I think by just seeing Ben in your case, we also connected via Twitter and also on Facebook, and you have voluminous contributions in both the Twitter and Facebook area. And I know, Sean, too, I've read a little on your blog and some of the other things that you've been doing, and the recommendations to have you on certainly were accurate. And so I'm delighted to have you guys on. I wanted to just maybe by way of introduction ask each of you to just describe a little bit about yourself and where you've been in the last while, maybe some of the other places you've worked, where you're working currently, and then we'll get into the session proper. So Ben, maybe you could just describe a little bit about yourself first.
Sure. So you know, I got into user experience design, interaction design through working as a chef, oddly enough. You know, I wanted to work in film and tell stories, and I was a playwright for a long time in school, and then moved to Los Angeles and started making movies, but I had to pay the bills. So I worked as a cook and then went to culinary school, but throughout all of that, I was building interfaces and writing HTML code, mid-90s. And meeting with customers. And I really got a lot of satisfaction out of, you know, creating something that the customer was just thrilled about, and then ultimately their users became thrilled about. Because in the early 90s, if you recall, a lot of businesses just wanted to have an online presence. They wanted to take their shop and make it web-enabled. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got started, and since, you know, it's just been a whirlwind. I was at Microsoft for a time, and before I started consulting for myself, I was at Cisco and the voice technology group of building out WebEx Connect, and working for Cordell Ratzlaff. So it's been a really interesting journey thus far.
It does, in fact, sound like that. And welcome to the podcast. And so now we'll move over to Sean. And maybe, Sean, you could describe a little bit about yourself as well.
Yeah, sure. Well, I actually started working and getting involved in the South by Southwest Interactive Festival about 10 years ago. It's a year-round endeavor. And we've been fortunate that over the past few years, the interactive part of the event has grown considerably. Been this focal point for the design community and folks that work in emerging technology. Initially was brought on to help coordinate a web awards competition that we do that's now in its 13th year, and eventually got dragged into a lot of other projects We're kind of a small organization, so we wear many hats. So ended up doing a lot of front-end web development over the years, as well as now more strategic insights into our social media strategies and just overall programming of the interactive part of the event. So just a little bit there.
Sounds exciting, and you've been doing it a good solid period of time. So again, welcome to you too, Sean, to the panel for this this episode. What's exciting about this episode and the approach that we're going to take to it is to first talk about, as we usually do, sort of the design related news from the last period of time, and that's typically a month or two. And after we talk about that material, we'll then spend a bit of time recognizing that by some accounts we just finished a decade. Some people may debate that, whether it's actually this year or next year that really is the end of the decade, but I think most people are now at least recognizing that we closed a decade. And we'll spend a little bit of time talking about what we think are the biggest user experience design innovations and stories and happenings of the last decade, and we'll finish up by just giving it some thought as to what kind of predictions we might have for the future. What might happen in the whole field of user experience and design when we look into the next year and even as far out as a decade from now. So why don't we start by looking at what happened in the last month or two. And actually a lot has happened when I was sort of taking stock of where things were at and what things had happened. I realized that we experienced, and I'm just going to start off the discussion today with some items that I had noticed. We've seen a lot of development in the area of immersive visual experience and the making available of the movie Avatar with its three 3D technologies that it incorporates. A very expensive movie, but one that generated an awful lot of discussion when people started to talk about user experience or the actual experience of seeing the movie, experiencing the movie, really. It's much more now than just sitting back and seeing something and something flat on the screen. It's really an experience, an immersive experience, and one that I thought maybe we could talk about. And related to that really is the CES announcements of just a plethora of 3D TVs coming online later this year as well. And so I wanted to start off maybe with a discussion of the introduction of Avatar, these 3D TVs, and the whole notion of the visual sphere of the various technologies we're dealing with here, taking a dramatic turn, it seems to me, in this last while from being completely gimmicky in the past, but really getting to the point where we're experiencing a pretty dramatic shift in the visual experience that we have with movies and other things. So I wanted to ask if any of you had thoughts on that technical development.
Sure. Well, I just like to say, you know, sensory immersion is really going to set the trend, I think, in the future. You know, with Avatar was fantastic experience, and if you haven't seen 3D, it's definitely a must. I was thoroughly impressed with the see-through touchscreen glass monitors. Of course, you see this in all the sort of science fiction films, and it's like, well, where can I buy one of those? That just looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Future as far as you know 3D TV and you know, really, it's, you know, we want to get that visual cortex, right? We want to ping that visual cortex as hard and as fast as we can. We've got five inputs, right? Five senses, and really, I can see that the future of what we're doing, and I think a lot of design is really, you know, involving more of the senses. You've got, you know, visual cortex is totally immersed in the film. You've got great sound. You depending on the speakers, you've got the sense of touch. I think, you know, it would be fantastic personally to have a 3D TV at home and be able to watch a football game from a top-down vantage point. I just see that, you know, it's going to be about sensory immersion as sort of being the trend, because the more that I'm emotionally or the more sensorily engaged, the stronger the impression, the stronger the memory, right? Which is great for a brand ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. And any other thoughts from the rest of you? Those of you who have either experienced Avatar or still plan to, and perhaps have heard about it. Anybody else have thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's very interesting because I had just read an article. I haven't seen Avatar, and I plan to do so this Sunday. But I was reading an article about if any of the studios, the big studios, plan on releasing something as engaging as Avatar. And it was very interesting what the comments were. First of all, I don't know if everyone knows, but James Cameron actually invented this camera. It was completely new, and he, of course, partnered up with some hardware companies to really invent this new camera that was just, you know, light years ahead of the normal 3D immersive qualities that we've seen in the past. And of course, this is a very expensive undertaking. So when the New York Times went out and asked other studios if they were going to be releasing any of these big, you know, grandiose, incredible, immersive movies, they said, well, you know, not anytime soon, because for one, it's extremely expensive. And for two, and secondly, the actual technology itself is not yet released. So the conclusion of this article was that we may have to wait a year or two before we see something of the caliber of a movie like Avatar.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'll add a quick thought here. I'm really curious about how the timeline of adoption about this particular technology, because if there's anything that we've seen from the web, you know, there's been this return over the past couple of years to, you know, use of white space. You know, you don't see a lot of the, you know, flash-heavy immersive online experiences because everybody's about, you know, consuming content as quickly as you can. Content is king, a lot of things like that. And while there's no doubt that everybody geeks out and loves an immersive cinematic experience, I'm really curious to see, you know, if that's going to end up moving into other areas and how quickly that happens. I would bet that it's going to be slower than we would all like. Another kind of funny thing that I noticed, and it's kind of an example of this, some, you know, I'll refer to them as the font police, if you will, were critical of Avatar in terms of the typography used in the movie because of the font it was based on. And I thought that was kind of amusing. You know, here you have this amazing visual movie that is no doubt exciting everyone's neurons, and then you've got a group of designers that are kind of critical of, you know, look at the budget and why couldn't you have better typography in the movie? And I think that's pretty hilarious.
It is. It is. And I wonder, you know, getting back to your point too, Sean, about the notion of, are we really pushing the envelope here, and are we going to be coming back before it really gets broader adoption? Is it going to be quite as immersive and the like, as like some of the things that are happening on the web? I wonder, with technologies like this, we see them introduced in sort of entertainment in the consumer space, and people talk about them being relevant to other, you know, spaces as well. We might get into that discussion some more on things like you know, touch and gesture and those types of UIs. People have often, you know, talked about that maybe some of these things are only relevant to those spheres, but others will argue that there are pieces of these kinds of technologies that then make their way into, you know, more traditional sorts of UIs and transforming them. And so I wonder where all of this will go with regard to 3D visuals. You know, are we going to start to see a user interface to our, you know, computer screens that have more of this capability sort of in it? It would make sense. People have talked for a long time in the whole area of data visualization, that where you could actually really work in three dimensions. So it's not just for the sake of the immersive experience in the sense of that it's a wow experience, but that it's actually a valuable one, that it that you can actually deal with things in three dimensions and to be able to actually, you know, rotate, you know, data and the like. I'm just wondering whether, I mean, we're seeing it in other areas. We're seeing it in the area of gesture and the like, that, and certainly with touch, that it's gone from the research lab to an environment that is more, you know, consumer and entertainment, perhaps, you know, into a pervasive one that ends up being adopted everywhere. Now, it's often not exactly the way that it was, and I think that's the point you were making too. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with this as we start to think about what might happen over the next decade.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, everyone remembers what happened to print magazines after Minority Report came out, for example. A lot of interesting things there. I think the key really is going to be how quickly can they take a lot of these 3D, you know, creation tools and get them in the hands of the communities that create all this amazing stuff. I think that with a lot of these kinds of technologies, as soon as you enable others to build amazing things with it, that's when you see it take off.
It's also the case that there's a level of realism. You know, the other thing that happened in the last month or two, anyway, is the introduction of another title for the gaming systems, the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. It had amazing sales figures, right? The highest sales figures, I think, in any entertainment title in a 24-hour period. And when you look at the immersive experience with that, the realism, the interactivity and the like, I think we're seeing in the entertainment field amazing levels of, and I think it's just accelerating really fast to the point where I keep on wondering, you know, what kind of impact that will have for other kinds of user interfaces, other kinds of interfaces to, you know, information, for example, that we have in, you know, non-entertainment circles as well. So I think it's an exciting time and one to watch in terms of where everything might go in the future. Any other thoughts on any of those topics?
Yeah, this is Keith. One of the things I bookmarked was Scott Birkin sort of complaining that the desktop user interface is going to be boring. And we've covered that before on previous ones, but this to me, like you said, Carl, and everybody else, this one looks like it could have an impact there, because we're at work, we're sitting at a desk, right? You know, today everything's kind of abstract. So at what point will the technology make things more realistic, and in what way? So that, right, it's we can take advantage of these to help us do our jobs.
And that'll be fun to watch, I think, in terms of these kinds of technologies, whether the day-to-day work environment is going to dramatically change with some of these technologies, too.
Well, I just want to say one thing, and I'll make it brief. The 3D capability, I think, would be fantastic add-on to, say, something like AutoCAD or an architecture firm where I'm actually able to design in a three-dimensional space instead of using a screen. I think it would be very, very helpful in sort of really speccing out. I think any type of product design really would really benefit from some sort of 3D technology.
It'll be fun to watch that space and see where all that goes. And speaking of, you know, watching the space, wanted to switch gears now, if we could, and give some thought to the last decade. Kind of hard to think back exactly what this decade was all about, but, you know, it started off as the dot-com bust, largely at the beginning of the decade, but very, very interesting one, I think, from a user experience point of view. And I wanted to sort of ask the question next of what we think were the biggest user experience design innovations, happenings, you know, stories that you think of with regard to the last decade. What to you was the most dramatic kind of change? And let me start the discussion and then go around the table and the virtual table and get your thoughts on it as well. I think there are several, but one of the ones that I think was pretty dramatic was the sort of browser enhancements and browser enablement of rich internet applications and cloud computing, basically taking what in the previous decade was, you know, a requirement of running everything on a desktop and desktop operating systems being, you know, really important, to one of having basically your data in the cloud, and the technology capability within a browser of being able to actually have virtually that same UI experience in the browser. being able to go anywhere, be able to access anything from anywhere, have rich experience in the browser as well, and also different browser sizes. So you can do that on a computer, you can do it on a netbook, you can do it on your phone from anywhere. So that's one of the things that I was going to suggest as being a pretty dramatic happening that now doesn't require users to install anything. You don't have to go and buy this huge thing that's going to take up. I mean, we still have, obviously, and there are still needs to have particularly installed applications. But the trend, really, and I think the demonstration of the capability was certainly there by a number of vendors to be able to show that we don't have to do everything ourselves anymore. We don't have to be the administrator for our own computers. We can now have family members, for example, that we just set up accounts and cloud computing kind of services. They can deal with everything in a browser. You can do it from anywhere. They can save stuff in the browser. You don't have to do all kinds of stuff on your own machine. And while it's not a complete switch over to, you know, RIA and cloud computing, I think we've seen a dramatic switch that I think is going to have an impact on the user experience of a lot of users in a variety of contexts. So anyway, any thoughts on that one? And then also any other suggestions with regard to what you think was the dramatic change in the last decade?
I can add a little bit to that. I think you're spot on there. You know, one of the things that we do to help program the Interactive Festival every year, we've been doing this for about 3 or 4 years now, is something called the Panel Picker, where we solicit proposals from the community and everyone gets to vote on them. And I think more than anything, it's an excellent, you know, zeitgeist of the industry and where trends are going. And what we've seen, especially in the past year or two, are a couple things, and one of them being your data in the cloud. Not only from a technical side of people wanting to talk about how they can do that, but also the risks and rewards, as well as, you know, obviously a lot of asynchronous data technologies, you know, AJAX, all the Scriptaculous libraries and things like that that allow kind of the front end to move around to where the browser is no longer this, you know, static dump of code that it used to be. So I think, you know, browser developments that you're pointing at are spot on there.
I think that I'll add to that as well. I think it's also how we interact with this information, right? With this new ways of interacting with information and so on. And so on. And what is created? I mean, it's created all these, you know, these social interaction sites where people go in and, you know, they talk to each other and on these different using different programs, like Twitter, Facebook, so on and so forth. And they're all in the cloud. But it's really interesting. You know, people can. You know, people can, you know, they can comment, they can share information, and all this has created this kind of community, this community sense, and Facebook is a really prime example of that, and MySpace as well, so that people can really come together, and how they interact is, and the user experience has completely changed from, let's say, 10 years ago, where you had your, you know, where it was very much, you were engaged with your computer, and that was pretty much it. And then, of course, came the advent of the ICQ, where you were able to connect with people outside of your computer, which was miraculous. And this was in the, I believe it was in the late 90s. So I think from an interaction perspective and from also the total user experience, it's completely changed how we use and how we interact with technology.
Yeah, I think it probably really is I think I blogged about this a while ago, that HCI, human-computer interaction, really switched over to being, you know, human-to-human interaction mediated by a computer, right? So it was really the decade of the introduction of social media, social computing technologies like Facebook and Twitter and the like, where the software is just enables a bunch of human activities that we would normally do and we're able to do pretty easily. And it's almost like the easier the method of communicating with others is, the more popular, you know, it would be, right? And, you know, when you think of in Twitter's case, you know, just write 140 characters, period, and you're done, you know, nice and net. And it's been obviously hugely successful in terms of the last estimates of Facebook size is, you know, 350 million people regularly using the site. And I think we all do. And it's transformed many, many, many people's lives. So it's, I think that's an excellent example as well. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. To me, when I look back at the past 10 years, it was sort of like 10 years ago, I had the technology in front of me, and then I had some information and some other stuff, and I could sort of see and feel people at the other end, but it felt pretty distant.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, right? Nowadays, the people feel a lot closer. They're still just as far away physically, but the technology's not in the way, and it just everybody feels closer when I'm sitting at my desk or when I'm doing something with my phone or whatever. So to me, that's the big change. The technology's much more out of the way, and people feel much more connected now.
I think it's a great point about the emotional response, you know, to social media, and you know, again, we're social animals. All these technologies are just further fostering that and those behaviors in us. I was kind of fortunate to be, I guess, on the front lines, if you will, when Twitter was involved in South by Southwest in 2007. Mm-hmm. And we had worked with them, and they approached us, and they're like, hey, we have this thing. You know, we want to put up these plasma displays in the hallway, you know, and show these messages flying around. And I think at the time, you know, I mean, we knew a lot of the folks involved and Twitter, and obviously Ev, and mm-hmm. other folks coming from Pyre Labs, and you know, these are the folks that had, you know, built all the major blogging platforms, you know, back almost a decade ago now. And so it was great to see, you know, the community of key influencers and folks, you know, have their eyes opened to the potential of that kind of communication. And I think more than anything, just fostering those relationships is what really made it such a successful thing. And that's what's great. You know, people crave the very human, you know, behaviors of touch and feeling part of a tribe. And I think, you know, the social media explosion has just, you know, fostered that in amazing ways.
I think it's also been further amplified and I think even more pervasively used by one other of the major sort of innovations of the decade, and that's mobile UIs, I would suggest. And that when I think about how I use Twitter and Facebook, I use probably 90% of my use of those sites is actually using the iPhone. And its UI, its mobility, the fact that it's also got a real browser. That was also a new thing that happened, I think, this last decade, that prior to the iPhone, whenever anybody said there was internet connectivity on a phone, it was pretty bizarre. And it was pretty dramatic to actually be able to get a, you know, fully functioning, you know, mini browser, Safari browser on the iPhone. Of course, now everybody's been trying to, you know, copy that experience, and we're seeing a lot more of those UIs as well. But I think it's an instance of one where the real accomplishment wasn't so much in the technologies themselves as it was the way that they were actually put together in a way that it was dramatic. And we're recording this short of an announcement that has been probably an announcement that's been anticipated more than any other across the IT industry for many years, even though there's virtually no basis for the expectation of the announcement, talking about things like the tablet. But the discussion there too is that we've had many instances of these technologies in the past. There's been many, you know, tablets in the past. There's been many attempts at these interaction styles, even as they came out of research labs. But I think the accomplishment of the iPhone was really one of truly pulling it all together in a way that user experience was stellar, so that there wasn't one detail that was messed up or kludgy in any way. And so I would suggest that's another of the significant accomplishments of the last decade, fairly close to the end of the decade. And I think it's also going to be one that's going to drive future directions into the next decade as well, which we'll get into in a few minutes. But any other thoughts on that one or any other innovations that you'd like to nominate as being significant from the last decade?
Oh, I just have a funny little, when I was doing some research earlier for this podcast, Carl, on December 13th, I found one that I bookmarked that basically said, you know, these two guys didn't invent anything. They weren't the first to do it, but they just put the pieces together to make it workable and to make it usable. Mm-hmm. And those two folks were the Wright brothers. So I think, you know, this is a sign of the, you know, the way the technology evolves over a long period of time. It's not the first, it's the ones that put it together the right way, mm-hmm. that really make the difference.
And then also get a significant following. I think that the other thing that we saw over the last decade was instances where something was interesting. Like you say, there are a number of different solutions out there. There's an amazing amount of competition, really, in any of these spaces. And the social computing one is a particularly good example, I think. But we have kind of crowd behavior. We have, and I think because everything is so digital and everything is so immediate, you can see, you know, practically overnight. I mean, realistically, it took, you know, a year or two for some of these things to really take off. But when they take off in an amazing, you know, way. When you think of something like Facebook, for anybody to use anything, you know, to the tune of 350 million people, those are kind of numbers we never, ever thought of before. We also probably never thought that any internet infrastructure would actually be able to handle those kinds of, that kind of punishment, that kind of use. But there really was this transformation, I think, in being able to very rapidly, once an idea catches on, you know, that it can be extremely popular. I mean, the other thing that we see happening like that is on YouTube, right? And that too is something that happened in the last decade where, you know, you can now have in a variety of different, this is just the video stuff, but in other cases as well, where you now have somebody who in the past would have had to go through all kinds of gatekeepers to be given access to a large audience and become popular. You know, all they need to do now is record a video on their flip camera and upload it to YouTube. And, you know, they can end up getting millions and millions of hits and become, you know, popular all by themselves without necessarily having a lot of others, you know, involved in it as well. So I think the whole notion of the crowd being able to directly influence what happens to either technologies or individual content is also a dramatic shift that happened in the last decade. Okay. Why don't we, if we've at least touched on these highlights of the last decade, why don't we switch in the last sort of 10 minutes or so of the podcast today and do some thinking about where all of these user experience design trends may be going. You know, what are we going to see in the next year, next, you know, 5 years, next 10 years? What kinds of things are we going to see that are going to be potentially dramatic changes in the way that we deal with technology, the way that we deal with each other, the way that we carry out our work, the way that we experience, you know, entertainment? And here again, let me just throw out an idea. We can start the discussion, and then any of you can contribute your ideas to it as well. The one sort of theme that, again, I'm certainly not the first to suggest, because I think it is, to use the thinking that you'd mentioned earlier, Sean, of zeitgeist, I think there really is a common sort of expectation now that the next, you know, while is going to see a real emergence of successful and bringing together of natural user interfaces. So everything from embedded displays to touch that we're already seeing to, you know, we saw speech independently in the past. We've seen some level of introduction of gesture. We've seen a lot of social, person to person. We've also seen, you know, mobile and pervasive sort of UIs. The thinking is that while each of these have been individual sorts of technologies that are used in particular instances in the past, that there's some expectation or hope, I guess, that we're going to start to see combinations of each of these and perhaps all of them together to see pretty dramatic developments in the whole area of user experience and design. Anyone's thoughts on the likelihood that these things are going to happen? Any thoughts as to which of these you think may be, you know, the most important or things that we're going to see first, or any other thoughts that you might have on where user experience design is going to be going over the next decade or so?
One thing that, this is Sean, I'll just jump in here. One thing that I'm really curious about is the role of sustainability in a lot of this. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a hot topic these days and something that everyone's talking about. And I think in a lot of a lot of folks in the design community, particular web or UX or whatever, think, oh, my digital footprint is small. I don't need to worry about it. And what I would really love to see, and I think what you were talking about, these kind of weird combinations of things, and I think you're on the right track there. What we're going to see, for example, a lot of developments in terms of material science where, oh yeah, I'm growing my mobile phone, at home, and I've got my digital paper here, but actually, the wood version, the tree, some of the oldest technology, I'm keeping that around, because it, again, provides a better, more nimble user experience. And so I think that those kind of the pressures of kind of this really economic pressure on different companies, whether it's doing product design or anything else, are going to impact ultimately the user interfaces. I think everybody's, obviously thinking that things are going mobile, but I'm really curious, is something as simple as trying to find a wooden case for an iPhone to something, much more complex. I just think that those pressures, I think, are working against each other. And I think we're going to have a bunch of really amazing surprises, and particularly in terms of mobile device design and how those interfaces work.
That's a great point about sort of sustainability. And when you think about the speed with which we switch from one of these mobile devices to the next, in terms of how long anybody uses their cell phone these days, not because they wear out, but because there's a new one that everybody needs. And there's also some, comment there about, level of consumerism that we have in this whole technology space. I think you're quite right. I think we will see, or will need to see, if we want to see the whole green direction that a lot of us are really embracing, or at least I think a lot of people paying lip service to, if we're actually going to make it real, then the directions that we're seeing here and that overall trend need to be coming together. We're seeing it just out of necessity, I think, in terms of data centers taking huge requirements in terms of power and necessarily going over to alternate energy sources for doing that. Also huge focus on making all of these devices that much more efficient. But I think you're quite right. I think this is a whole area that we need to see a lot of more work in, and it'll be an exciting one to look for.
Yeah, I think just one person quickly to pay attention to is Valerie Casey of the Designers Accord, who had been involved, IDEO and done a lot of product design. It's really interesting, her comments, and as of late, in terms of, getting kind of the focus on sustainability much earlier in the design process, not only for products, but for any kind of experience and end user experience. So.
Yeah, I was thinking of the same thing from a slightly different angle, I think. I was thinking in terms of, at least for me, I've been focusing a lot on, designing experiences or pieces of the experience for the virtual world. In the next 10 years, it's going to be more about connecting that to the physical world. So sort of what you're talking about, Sean, we can design software that has different components. You don't have to throw an entire piece of software away. You can just download a little plugin and extend it. We need to be thinking of that for the physical world a little bit better, so that we can plug and play. Part of it is so that we don't have to waste as many components, but part of it is because it's cheaper. It lets the services plug in a little bit more. So I think it's sort of extending our software development way of thinking, having these different services that talk to each other. Can we extend that to the physical world a little bit more and make it more robust and also more, more economically friendly?
Which makes me think too, Keith, of another trend that isn't technology based necessarily, but is one that is a trend over the last, I'd say, year and a half, 2 years, and that is the overall focus of what design should be and what the overall focus of design should be. There is, again, a real trend of, I'd say, I could think of 10 authors that have written books in the last year and given talks about things that are all about doing design in the large, big picture thinking, design thinking, a variety of terms that are being used for it. But this whole notion that we've, gone through as an overall set of disciplines that are working on user experience design over the years and become a little bit myopic you know, in terms of the devices that we're creating and the like, and that each of the things that we've talked about today are designed as a unit that is used independently of all kinds of other things that we've maybe designed. And I think maybe one of the trends, even with regard to the natural UIs that I'd sort of listed at the beginning of this section, is that we need to step back. We have to do more macro design. We did an episode or a webcast on World Usability Day. We're talking about the design of cities and how can we take design up to the level of designing an entire city so that it's, you know, more sustainable, is greener, the systems work better, the way you have monitoring place to optimize the way the city works. That as a unit of focus for design, that's a kind of new thought. And there's new methods that we need to think through. And some of the methods we already have are appropriate, but it's also, I think, a useful exercise to think of, you know, improvement in the world in general is also to take the skills of designers and open that aperture and design, you know, with broader brushstrokes, or certainly designing, you know, a larger system, which may well also be required if we're going to be, you know, talking about the linkage of these various technologies and also the use of each of them in concert in creating, you know, user experiences for individuals as well as groups of people and possible whole cities and even the whole planet. So any thoughts on directions in the discipline itself and areas of focus along these lines?
Well, Sean here again. I think you're right. I think there's a lot of interesting things going on there, and I think we're going to see a lot of that actually in developing nations. You know, obviously, a lot of these markets and economies, having a mobile device is, you know, much easier to get your hands on than in front of a full-blown computer. And so I think a lot of these markets in these developing nations are really going to drive a lot of that development. And again, it goes, that's where we're going to see this, you know, new design thinking. You know, design can save the world, and where you see, you know, people stop talking about, you know, being green, but it's really about social justice. And so I think, like, for example, if you look at the horrific events in Haiti and organizations like what Cameron Sinclair is doing with Architecture for Humanity, mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of organizations like that, they're taking good design processes and applying them, you know, with this effort to make the world a better place. And even within the social media sphere, you hear people talking about social businesses and a lot of different things like that. So I think you're right. You know, people are, the community and the public at large, because of, you know, experiences like Avatar, are much more aware of design, I think, than they've ever been. And I think that that's kind of cool to see. People get excited about that. People want good design. And then to see that kind of change into more of a social agenda.
Speaking of along all those lines, I think what we'll see also is we'll see much, and this is all in the realm of good design and designing for different applications, is that we'll see a lot more consumer goods become available through the technology, through the cloud technology. Let's say, you know, fridges, groceries, books, the whole netbook experience. And I think we'll see a real evolution in terms of how, you know, how we interact with this, how we get our groceries, how we interact with books, and so on. I think that's going to be also a big surge. And also, you know, going back to the developing countries, recently I was in South America, and I was blown away by the immediacy of these Wi-Fi cafes and restaurants. They were everywhere. Everywhere you went, you can go in and, you know, set up your computer and start working. And, you know, this is something that here in Canada you don't see as much. So I think that is something that I thought was very interesting.
Very, very true. Now, we're rapidly running out of time. I just realized it's been a great discussion. In some respects, these discussions never end, and we will pick up on these themes, I think, in the sessions that we have planned in the weeks and months to come. But I wanted to, at this point, sort of wrap things up a little and thank everyone for their participation in the podcast, Keith and Eliane and Ben and Sean. Wanted to also just mention that you can follow this podcast, encourage others to do so as well by going to iTunes and simply putting in the search bar UX Designcast. You can also see previous episodes on ibm.com/design, as well as on uxdesigncast.com. And wanted to ask Ben and Sean if there are coordinates, a URL perhaps, that you want to give out to have people find more about you. Ben, is there a URL that you'd like to give everyone?
I guess the only one would be Twitter. Ben Sykes, BenSykes, is probably the best place to go.
Excellent. Okay, and Sean, any coordinates you want to give?
Yeah, the Twitter. I'm unfortunately, Twitter has killed most of my blogging. but yes, just Sean O'Keefe, straightforward on Twitter, as well as SeanO'Keefe.com.
Excellent. Okay, and we also have IBM Design on Twitter as well, which is probably the place that you can find me. I've also have a personal account on Twitter, but probably the best one to use is the IBM Design one. So with that, I'd like to thank all of you for your contributions. Wish you also a happy new year. I guess it's not too late, too far into the year to wish all of you that are on the panel a happy new year, and also all of you who are listening as well. I want to thank you for listening to this session. Have a happy new year, and we'll be talking to you all very soon. Bye for now.